Kev, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm going to apologize in advance if you hear screaming in the background. That is news. It sounds like my oldest daughter has successfully passed her driver's license test today.
And
that is breaking news in the Woodley household. I'm hearing a lot of screaming and yelling and happiness from upstairs, so I apologize if you guys can hear that in the background.
Dude, I get it. That's a big one. That is a big one for sure. So, love it. Congratulations. Nice. Now, there was probably yelling and screaming, maybe some tears in your household when Henrik Lundqvist announced he is retiring. And Lundqvist, of course, you know, had an unbelievable career in the National Hockey League. Of course, in Sweden, won a gold medal at the Olympics. Or I think he was on that team. But he made a big impact in goalie equipment, Kev, and really change it. You had sent me a note about the Lundqvist loop. Explain what the Lundqvist loop is now for every manufacturer.
Well, okay, so first off, he definitely did win that gold medal in 2006. Okay. He was the number one goaltender there, and that was, of course, coming off his first NHL season. So, and then a silver in 2014. A lot of people forget that he was the one opposite Carey Price, and I think, was it a 1-0 game? So, yeah, just a hell of a career. Right up there with Luongo in terms of his generation, I'd have them at the top of it, a tier below the ones that preceded them, you know, Waugh, Brodeur, and Hasek. But you're right, it wasn't just, there's so much to this guy's career beyond the wins and the numbers, and one of them is the way he impacted the equipment. Now, one of them is the Lundqvist loop. And so on every manufacturer goalie skate, and they're kind of, now they're coming up with new ways of sort of doing it, it's basically a loop at the back of your skate. In some cases, it looks like a tab that you can run a strap through. And the reason it started was Henrik, when they shortened the pads, like Lundqvist wasn't the tallest goalie for starters, but proportionally, like, he didn't have the longest legs. And so they went to a sizing chart and tied it to the height of the pads. He got hammered. He was in pads when he originally came into the NHL that were quite tall. Like, at one point I heard they were like plus 5 inches on the thigh rise, but that was no longer legal. And so as they shrunk his pads on him, he needed to find a way to have that pad at the maximum allowable height move up his leg and cover more of the five hole. He figured, I don't want this pad pulled down tight to my skates. When I drop to the ice, I want to give it some freedom to move up. And in the past, goalies had on their skates what we call a boot strap. And it's a leather strap. Now I guess it's nylon and Velcro to cut weight, but it used to be a leather strap with a metal buckle that goalies would run underneath the bottom, either the middle of the foot or the heel, to hold the pad down. Well, Lundqvist didn't want to run it through his skate to hold the pad down. He needed to find another way to let the pad slide up. And so him and the equipment manager in New York came up with this loop, because when they first tried it, I guess having the strap sit in behind his skate, it was just rubbing and catching and sort of all over the place loose. So they invented this loop back there called the Lundqvist loop, and that's where he put that strap. And now here we are, you know, as he finished his career, I want to say that wasn't right away, but probably, I don't know, a few years into his career, at least, might even be closer to 2010, 2011, whenever those rules changed, maybe even 2013. Since then, now every manufacturer offers its stock, whether it's Bauer with an actual loop, CCM with a big loop, or the new True Skates, they actually put a metal bracket back there that you can run your pad through. And so there's just one example of something tied to Henrik Lundqvist that will, in likelihood, live on forever in the goalie world. And the other part was, you've heard me talk about the pads and active rebounds and how the Bauer pads are designed now to create big rebounds that shoot past that first wave of forwards around the net, or make it harder for them to bat it out of the air and knock it in the net because of how hot it's coming off the pads. Well, again, Lundqvist played a role in that. Bauer's original idea with their concept of pads in the Odin series was to deaden rebounds. But when they changed the way they built pads and changed the foams, they found they came off really hot. And it was Lundqvist who said in testing, hold on, this is a good thing. I like this. We want rebounds that go further away from us. And so now you've got not just Bauer leading that way, but every other, you know, manufacturer. CCM now offers it in all their lines, like the Max Rebound Plus type spec. You've got everyone sort of copying that. Like, we want rebounds that give us time to recover rather than keep the puck close to us. And so just a couple more examples of the impact that Henrik Lundqvist had on the game beyond his greatness statistically and with all the wins and all the great seasons he had in New York. And Swedish, don't get me started on Swedish. I sent notes to a bunch of guys. Like, up until Henrik's debut in the National Hockey League, Jason, there were 8 Swedes who had played in the NHL. Since he debuted, there's 26. And when you talk to goalies from Sweden, goalies who have followed in his footsteps, goalies like Linus Ullmark, who sent me a note over the weekend talking about, like, you know, he was a modern enough guy that he didn't have the poster on the bedroom wall, but he had the, you know, they had the screen on the backdrop of his computer and on his phone. Eddie Lack, all these guys grew up sort of admiring Lundqvist. He was their version of Waugh coming out of Quebec, Kiprusoff coming out of Finland, Bobrovsky and Vasilevsky out of Russia. He was the guy that inspired athletes in Sweden to want to be a goaltender. And so when you look at the Swedish goaltending manual now, it's a picture of Henrik Lundqvist from the 2006 Olympics that's on the cover of it. And so his impact there is even greater.
Yeah, he had a huge impact, no question. Kevin Woodley from InGoal Magazine and NHL.com today. Looking at UFA goalies who are remaining, what do you see happening? What are you hearing?
Well, there's not that many left, right? And there's not that many chairs. Well, as a matter of fact, the chairs are all full. We take a look around the league and, you know, I mean, the couple of the spots left where you have maybe some questions are, you know, Calgary down the road from you. Are they really going to run with a Dan Vladar, Jacob Markstrom combo? Vladar hasn't had a ton of NHL experience, and yet he requires waivers, and they gave up assets to get him. And so you got to think that they see enough there that they're at least going to give him that shot out of the gate, and especially with a head coach like Daryl Sutter, who tends to ride the living crap out of his number one, your backup's probably not going to play that much. But man, if Markstrom gets hurt, that's not a great insurance policy. In terms of the guys that could fill a hole like that, there aren't many left. Devin Dubnyk, and I reached out to him today, but haven't heard back yet. And I'll be honest, my apologies there, Jason. I was a little tardy, and it's something I probably should have done a while ago because I'm a little surprised he hasn't got a contract anywhere. He's one of the few guys left. Talked with Curtis McIlhenny last week, coming off back-to-back Stanley Cup championships. Now, his numbers were way down last season, but when you talk to him, you get a sense of why. Like, he only played 12 games. And he had two that were, he wasn't great, and the team was terrible in front of him. They turned into blowouts, and when you're the backup, they don't take Andre Vasilevsky off the bench and put him in for you. You just got to ride it out. So his whole season statistically was basically nuked by a couple of bad starts, but this guy's only a couple of years removed from coming off the bench and guiding the Carolina Hurricanes into the conference finals. He's had some success. He's got a track record. You'd think that experience might count, and yet he hasn't gotten an offer yet either. And there's a part of him that still wants to play. He's going to try and stay in shape and maybe see what shakes out, but he's also starting to look at other things. He's getting older and starting to wonder about maybe coaching. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens this season early on. Like, if Calgary isn't comfortable with Vladar, there's a whole bunch of other names that have to clear waivers to get to the minors, so maybe they look at that option, and we have that game of musical chairs that goes around. I think the one thing that you can count on for sure, and we've talked about this a little already, is you're going to need three. So you better be comfortable with the guy in the AHL playing games for you in the NHL, and I would hope if you're a team that has a guy that, you know, where you're worried about losing him on waivers to somebody else, that you're going to be smart enough this year to send him down early and not pay the price like other teams have of waiting too late and getting caught in that situation. Because if you lose your number three and you don't have a plan to replace him, like, that's going to be a tough spot to be this year. Another name that I forgot to mention, because he's kind of fallen off the radar, he's not an option out of the gate, but I got to wonder how many teams that have questions about their goaltending kind of in the back of their minds wonder where, especially the contenders, wonder what might be the status of a Tuukka Rask who had hip surgery this offseason and probably won't be ready to play until around January. But man, like, if you're a team that thinks they can win a cup but has questions left in goal, boy, would he be a pretty nice answer, because he's been exceptional for the Bruins. I know their rep is great defensive team, but they have leaned more and more on him as an individual in the past two seasons and more on goaltending, and he's been exceptional in that role. So there's one that doesn't count for October, Jason, but one that teams may have in the back of their minds as an option halfway through the season. And with the moves the Bruins made, even though they could still send Swayman down and bring in Tuukka to play with Ullmark, that signing of Linus Ullmark felt like the kind that, you know, was a move-on type signing versus let's see what Tuukka does in January kind of signing.
Kevin Woodley from InGoal Magazine and NHL.com joins us. So, Kev, that kind of gets me into we look at teams now, and, you know, you can go through it as far as, you know, ranking the tandems that you have. So we probably will start in the Pacific Division. And, you know, you look at it, like there's a lot of people in Edmonton that, oh, goaltending's a big problem. But Mike Smith had a great year. The problem is his birth certificate for some people. But his play was stellar last season. Like, stellar. And, you know, if you look at goalies who, like, let's call it what it is, goalies in the Pacific Division, now that Marc-Andre Fleury is no longer in the Pacific Division, right? Like, you look at goaltenders who played as much as Mike Smith and who we consider starters in this division. There's, you know, there's Fleury, but he's no longer there. You know, you can argue that Mike Smith, well, definitely of all the Pacific goalies who are now, he had the best season. So where would you rank Edmonton's tandem heading into this season?
Well, the one exception to that, Jason, that I would point out, and it was easy to sort of ignore it because the team was so bad. But when I look, at least when I look at the numbers, and I know they aren't the entire story, and I fully admit that, but when I look at the adjusted numbers, there was one other name that stood out on that list in the Pacific, as frankly being right up there with Vasilevskiy and Fleury in terms of his performance relative to his defensive environment, and that's Thatcher Demko. So don't sleep on him here in Vancouver.
Yep.
Curious to see whether Jaroslav Halak can have a bounce back after a down year last year, but three exceptional seasons before that. But you're right, beyond that, and listen, like I said this to Strati the last couple of weeks, I wasn't able to attend the Net360 camp up in Kelowna, but we did have somebody from InGoal. My business partner, David Hutchison, was there, and, you know, listening to goalie coaches from other teams, some of whom maybe weren't necessarily fans of Mike Smith going in. They couldn't believe how good he looked. And so all those changes we talked about him making last season, he's had another offseason to get more comfortable with them. He's brought in his private, like, he's always, every year going into the season, he's worked with a goalie coach out of Ontario, like, ever since he was a kid, named John Elkin. I think John is still in the Maple Leafs organization. I believe he actually recently moved up into a sort of more of a development / scouting role, but he's in the Leafs organization. This summer, instead of going to Toronto to work with him, Elkin flew in to sort of learn some of the new things that Mike Smith's been working on. So again, integrating these changes into his routine and his day-to-day and the people that help him. So I don't know where I'd rank them, and maybe this is an exercise for once we hit September, we'll go through like we did every year or the last couple of years. We rank the tandems in each division. I think Mikko Koskinen, like, the only downside of last year, again, was the first month, Mike Smith's out, Mikko gets ridden into the ground. I think if you can get off to the type of balanced schedule that we saw 2 years ago, that Mikko can have a bounce back, maybe not to the heights he was 2 years ago where he was top seven in the NHL in adjusted numbers, but certainly better than he was last year. And Mike Smith was a top 10 goalie in adjusted numbers last season. So I know it's really easy to question. I know it's real easy to look at that birth certificate and see that Mike Smith had one good year in the past six or seven to make that argument. But I think that last good year last season was a stepping stone and the start of something for him, as opposed to a blip. And I think that, you know, short of an injury that causes you to overplay Koskinen, and again to that number three role, I think they're better equipped now with Stalock in that hole if they can keep him, should there be an injury to Mike Smith, to not have to overplay Mikko Koskinen like they did last year. If you can find that balance, it's a pretty short, there's not that many that I'd rank ahead of them. Like, individually, Thatcher Demko, yes. Individually, to be honest with you, Cal Peterson, probably yes. He was exceptional through the first half last year for the Kings. Beyond that, In the Pacific, I'm not sure I have anybody else ahead of them. Seattle is sort of the wild card. They've built some nice goaltending, and I think they're going to be a very defensively focused team, so I wouldn't be surprised to see great results there. But in terms of tandems, Edmonton should be right up there with them.
Interesting stuff. Well, Kev, always good to catch up with you. We will, you know what? Maybe we'll look at that in September. We'll go through it. That'll be your homework assignment. So, because I know you're off next week. So when we get into September, look at having, we'll go through each division. We got four Mondays in September. So we'll go through one division each week and rank them for the tandems for each one.
I think that sounds like a perfect plan for September. I will excuse myself from next week for a little vacation, and I'll come back refreshed and ready to rank them.